The Mincing Rascals are mincing again. This is John Williams. Thanks for finding our podcast. Please share it with your friends and give us a good rating if you think we're doing a good job. If you don't, never mind. The bizarre, bigoted Buffalo Wild Wings incident in Naperville this week is where the Rascals begin. Then the reason Eddie Johnson is retiring from the Chicago Police Department. That ad that the teachers union is running caught our attention. You'll hear some of that here in our discussion. And of course, whew, a trip to Trump land, all coming your way. Today is Thursday. It's November 7th, 2019. It's 11:10 in the morning. Hi, this is John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, the podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio, downtown Chicago. Listen for me weekdays from 1 to 3. I'm looking at a room that isn't as crowded as it normally is. Heather, go.
Heather Sharone from The Daily Line.
I'm Eric Zorn, the lowlife columnist from the Chicago Tribune.
See, Bertrand, who is not a lowlife, will join us in moments, but he's actually following the Eddie Johnson
story. What he's
story.
Doing his job, right? Which, as opposed to the rest of us.
Which we will get to in just minutes. I'd say the biggest story, at least from a talk perspective, really from a news perspective this week in Chicago, has been this bizarre Buffalo Wild Wings story, right? In Naperville last month, a group of black adults and children were asked to move to a different part of the restaurant because a man which the restaurant staff identified as a racist did not want to sit next to them. You know, my hope at first was that the man's objection with the group, I said this on the air and regretted it almost instantly.
So you'll say it again on the podcast.
Well, my hope was, anyway, that his objection would be not with the color of their skin, but he didn't want to sit next to a basketball team of kids who were running around at a restaurant. And I can understand that if you were colorblind about this story.
Yeah, because Buffalo Wild Wings is where you always want to go for a nice, calm dining experience.
I said I regretted it almost as quickly as I said it. And furthermore, there's no evidence to support that interpretation of the event. It appears the employees knew of this guy. Buffalo Wild Wings' internal investigation has corroborated the version of the story first made public in a Facebook post by one of the adults there, Mary Vall. We spoke to her husband, who is the dad of one of the kids on the show, and their attorney this week, and it doesn't get better. It is as bold and bald-faced a bizarre, bigoted story as it appears. To say I'm shocked sounds naive, like I'm not paying attention, but I am shocked. I'm shocked that the guy would say that specifically, and that the staff at the restaurant would, knowing that, be so willing to accommodate him.
Yeah, I like what Phil Vitale said on your show the other day. He said, like, what time machine did I walk into where this open racism is practiced in a restaurant like that? It's like it was a shocking story. You said it doesn't get any better. The incident itself doesn't get any better, but the arc of the story does get better, and the Buffalo Wild Wings made no excuses for this at all. They fired the responsible parties, and they believe they have instituted some new racial sensitivity training and have done whatever they can to make amends. I'm guessing they're going to probably get sued for this, and probably are going to have to pay up for the irresponsible behavior of their employees, but unbelievable.
What struck me was that Naperville is now represented in Congress by Lauren Underwood, who is an African-American woman. And there was a lot of coverage a year ago about how this represents not only the purpling of Naperville, but also the growing diversity in Naperville, which when I grew up in Chicago was all white, basically cornfields. And I think that this, for a lot of people, was a sobering reminder that as progress has been made, perhaps not as much progress as we all thought had actually taken root.
69% of the population of Naperville is now identifies as white. And then 31% is non-white, and that means a lot of things, a lot of Asians, Hispanic. African-American is still a very small percentage. I don't know that explains this, right? I'm also, like you, Eric, happy if they get sued in civil court. They've said that they won't, as long as they get satisfaction. And I'm not sure that handbooks and sensitivity training is going to be satisfying to these people. And I don't blame them. It's not like they walked in there looking for money. And I think the only way you really get a corporation's attention is to cost them $1 million. So, hell, I don't care if they get $1 million. I don't care if they get $10 million.
Yeah, it's tempting to make too much of this in terms of like a corporate issue in that these employees really screwed up. And I guess they weren't trained well enough, or they weren't thinking, or maybe
they were raised by wolves.
Because one of the guy who was immediately interfacing with the African-American family was himself African-American.
A young black man was the host who first told them, we don't want to sit you next to the racist because he doesn't want to sit next to black people. That was a black man telling them that.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a bizarre work environment. That was, when you step back and think about it, this is really an awful situation for the families. What a terrible work environment for that young man.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, I think Darlene Glanton at our paper wrote a piece basically talking about how, you know, this isn't just Naperville or the Chicago area. This is something that happens all the time in maybe somewhat more subtle ways to African-American people in this country, and that so we shouldn't look at it as a complete one-off response, but it is an opportunity for us to continue to revisit this and to remind ourselves that racism is not dead. That, you know, the election of Barack Obama did not put us into a post-racial society.
Yeah, and I think that you're right about that. It's easy to say, oh, well, that's Naperville. Naperville has this white affluent reputation, and they're not very welcoming. You could have run into this in Manuka or a lot of other towns. So I don't know that Naperville gets off the hook for that. I mean, you know, perception is reality. And this isn't the first kind of incident like this. There was no video in this case, but there was the video at the gas station. Wasn't that a Naperville event last year where a guy said, you folks should go back to where he came from? He was talking to some young ladies that were from Mexico or were Mexican-American. So whatever the truth is about the people of Naperville, whether they're different than the rest of the world or not.
No, I don't think so.
But that's the perception. Does Chicago have a reputation as being a violent city that isn't as deserved as a reputation? Yes. Does Naperville have that kind of problem now with racial issues? Yes. Whether it's true or not doesn't matter.
Naperville is a large, I mean, I don't know how many people know Naperville, but it's not a little tiny suburb. I mean, it is a seriously large town out there. So it's not, so things like this will happen in large towns. So I don't know. Like I say, it was a terrible situation. I don't think that it necessarily has to stain everybody in corporate management at Buffalo Wild Wings or all the residents of Naperville. But it is something for us to remind ourselves that racism is still out there and poisonous.
I'm just going to throw this out there too. And if the family gets $8 million, they're not the bad guys in this story. I have no trouble with the lady that got burned at McDonald's for having hot coffee poured in her lap. I have no trouble with her getting a lot of money. That's how you got McDonald's to change the temperature of the coffee. This is how you get a company's attention. So, but
didn't you ask, I think one of your news click polls this week was about, are you going to go to Buffalo Wild Wings again? Does it make you more likely to go, I think was one of the options? Less likely to go or have
As
no
likely,
impact?
Yeah.
Have no impact on your
And it
decision.
Was like 45 and 45 and 5, right?
Or 5 said more likely.
Yeah, I know. And those are just people that do that.
It's the troll population. Yeah.
Exactly.
The Newell click poll.
They're not playing.
Let's yank John Williams' chain.
Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson is retiring at the end of the year. He's making that announcement even as we speak. He says, after traveling with his family to London to watch the Bears play, he realized how much he was missing. He says his recent road incident has nothing to do with the decision. In that event last month, he was found asleep at the wheel of his car at a stop sign. I believe it was about 12:30 in the morning. He'd had dinner and some drinks with some friends. He was not given a field sobriety test when the police came upon him. He was allowed to drive home. He said it was his medication that caused him to fall asleep. Our news click, Eric, asked people, what do you think of his performance? As superintendent, 59% are saying terrific, 35% are saying average, and 6% lousy. I think his reputation in that position's been pretty good, don't you?
I do. Look, there's Steve Bertrand, host of the Business Lunch.
Just watching the police superintendent, were you talking about his retirement?
We're just coming up on that now.
Yeah, we just came up with that, and he asked me a question, but since you've been watching.
Well, I think what struck me the most was, and it's still going on, the questions are coming, but was the heartfelt embrace that he got from Lori Lightfoot, and that how she talked about how this was a very difficult day and how they've been together for many years, back when she was running the police board, was that the right? And so, you know, it was just a full embrace there. And she said that he shows the leadership that President Trump doesn't.
The superintendent stood tall and refused to stand on a stage with a president who has villainized our city's values, repeatedly lied about our progress on violent crime, and about the superintendent personally. and he showed the president what true leadership and character look like.
So, I mean, they both sort of went back to that moment as well.
Why? Why did she bring up President Trump?
Well, I mean, look, he called for his resignation a week ago, and now it's happened.
Because you could fix this up so fast. Good leadership would be pretty easy to find. You have a lot of people right now in the department.
Well, I don't think that's why he's doing that. That's just a coincidence.
I don't know. I don't think it was Trump, but I think this... It was a week ago on this podcast that both Heather and I were sort of saying, well, that all of Trump's attacks on Eddie Johnson were cementing his ability to stay in that job, you know, for the indefinite future, because Lightfoot wasn't going to force him out under these circumstances, looking like she was knuckling under to Donald Trump. And yet, several days later, he floats this.
Right.
He tells reporters that what he's saying, I'm toying with the idea of retiring.
Yeah.
Like, what was that? And then this happens. How can you say it's coincidence? I guess there are coincidences in the world, but this doesn't seem like one. This seems like they must have had a heart to heart conversation and said, "You got to go, Putty."
Because of the traffic incident,
and the Laquan McDonald thing, where the Inspector General's report confirmed old news reports that he had been in the room right after the Laquan McDonald shooting, and he didn't raise any objections to it. He thought it was a good shoot. Both those things together had put him on some thin ice. I don't know. I mean, I'll accept the verdict of the table here, but coincidences a week after?
Well,
I think you're giving Trump way too much power.
Well, I was saying something different, too. I was picturing Trump claiming credit for this and making it clear that that wasn't the case. I don't know, Eric, if this was given to him or not. It seemed to me like it was his decision.
Don't you think it would be the opposite, Heather? That is, if Trump says he's got to go, then by God, he's going to stay.
Yeah.
That's what we thought.
So, I mean, aldermen were completely, just confused and incredulous yesterday with the coming news reports that he was planning to retire as soon as this week. Several of them approached me and sort of sotto voice said, is that really happening? And I said, that's what we're hearing.
Do you believe the narrative that he's offered, that he went with his family to the Bears game in London and thought, boy, I'm missing a lot?
He repeated that today, not to interrupt Heather, but he told the story, and I keep using the word heartfelt, I think, but he said, you know, I took my family to the Bears game, and he goes, and they lost, he said, but...
And it made me feel normal, and I saw them, how they missed me in that kind of setting, and that's pretty much what did it. I can't keep punishing them.
So, I mean, there was more to that than just hooking the resignation on that story, I think.
I mean, he has lived, you know, at least a decade in the last 4 years. He took over in the wake of the Laquan McDonald protest, which basically shut down Michigan Avenue after Thanksgiving. He then dealt with that fallout. He dealt with, you know, the death last year of Commander Paul Bauer across the street from City Hall. He dealt with the shooting at Mercy Hospital where an officer was gunned down. And he dealt with the death of two officers who were struck and killed by a train. And, you know, he's the one, and I think he said this today.
And some health issues of his own.
And he
right?
had health issues. You know, he had a kidney transplant from his son, who is now a member of the Chicago Police Department. There's no doubt that when he said that this job had taken a toll on my health, it had taken a toll.
He's passed out before. He's dropped on
some occasions. So I was sitting front row center the first time he passed out before we knew that he had kidney problems. And it was one of the most terrifying incidents of my career because he just basically went down, you know, full stop into Rahm Emanuel, who is a significantly smaller guy than Eddie Johnson is.
Yeah.
I think he took, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but he took a victory lap with the crime stats
He took an extensive victory lap.
So,
and the number that it was striking to me, because he talked about how he grew up in Cabrini Green in an area where they didn't trust the cops and the cops bullied and were racist and things like that. And then he had officer-involved shooting numbers for this year, and I'm sorry I don't remember them exactly, but I think it's like 16.
Yeah.
And compared to 10 years ago when it was 80 at this point of the year.
They're down significantly, and they made a big point of that during the budget hearing. The issue was is that we all at City Hall expected Lori Lightfoot to thank him for his service and ease him out the door once the summer months ended, simply because, you know, she would have wanted to put her own guy in that job, which is such an important position. But she's gonna face a very difficult task to replace him, because he was very, very popular on the South and the West Sides. Hmm. Very, very, because he's Chicagoans like homegrown leaders.
Well, I was gonna ask that then. Yeah. So because the leaders have come, with the exception of the last one that didn't work out so well. I mean, is this going to come from within the department, or they're talking about this former LA cop, or what's going on there?
Well, Charlie Beck was LAPD chief for many years. He was with the LAPD for 40 years, and the LA Times, which I was going to say was a sister paper of the Tribune, but is no longer.
Her out of the family.
She ruined it.
So when he stepped down, he said it's really important to know when to get off the horse. And, if he thought that a couple of years ago, it's not clear to me that he, you know, why he wants to get back on the horse in a whole new environment.
The bucking bronco of being the superintendent of Chicago.
Well, do you believe his story that he was sober at the wheel, fell asleep because he was off his meds?
So I am suspicious of any elected official's story, full stop. I am especially...
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, but I'm also suspicious of stories of that change. So first we heard it was medication. And but I did have a couple of drinks with dinner. So that change triggers my reportorial spidey sense.
So I'll say this, because I said it on your show, and take it for whatever it's worth. He was here at the radio station earlier that week. I think it was on Tuesday. And I bumped into him, said hello. And he had a different pallor about him. He did not look the way I usually see him look. Now, a lot of people, that's retrospect, you would say that.
Back to the newsroom after every podcast taping.
I did.
Those guys did not look well.
I did go back to the newsroom that morning, and I said to the people in the newsroom, hey, I just ran into Johnson. He does not look good. I mean, so I said it out loud to other people. Now, that it may be coincidence, I don't know. But that was my observation in the week of the ordeal.
I yield to no one in my cynicism in general, but... But I am going to say that I actually believe him in this case. He said he had two drinks, and two drinks at dinner. Two drinks at dinner, you're not like blackout drunk, where you're like, he's a couple blocks from home. Maybe the alcohol played a small role in it, but he has been sick. John, my final answer is I think yes.
I can't believe you and I are on the same page, because you're so much smarter and more cynical than me. But I tend to believe the guy. I had texts and calls from people, Eric, when we brought this up the other day, who were either police officers who said I was working a midnight shift, and I one time woke up stone sober, asleep at my wheel because it's late and we had a long day. I've also heard from people with medical issues who say they passed out because of their high blood pressure medication that they were taking or not taking, or it was the wrong thing. So people were relating to his being asleep at the wheel, if you will.
Yeah, and
now,
I know
was he drinking
who,
maybe?
And I know people
that.
Who had too much to drink and have woken up at an intersection, too. But one other thing that happened today, and again, I cut out before all the questions were, but when Mayor Lightfoot introduced the question time, she said, and now please let's keep your questions on topic. The superintendent's young son is here. I don't know how old he is, but he looked like maybe he was 10 or 12 years old.
Oh, that's...
Well, no, really, yeah. So the implication was, let's not get into this in front of the young boy.
No, that is nonsense. That you can't. You cannot hide behind your child at a news conference like that. I'm sorry.
I don't know if the reporters brought it up or not. I don't know. I'm just saying that I was kind of surprised that Lightfoot said that.
Okay, yes, the last question about this then is, why is Eddie Johnson stepping down?
Because he can. I mean, he's been doing it for 4 years. He wasn't going to do it forever. Maybe this incident behind the wheel wore him out. I mean, I believe the London story, too, did have a play. I mean, the way he told the story, I think that had an impact. He said, if he hasn't been going home until 10:30 or so for 4 years.
So my question is, and I don't know the answer to this, is whether the Inspector General's investigation will continue.
Yes,
now
good
that
question.
He's retired. I don't know the
what
answer
would it
to
find?
That question.
What's the worst case scenario?
So my question is not whether Eddie Johnson was drunk. We will never know whether he was drunk, because he was not breathalyzed. My question is was there department policy not followed in allowing him to drive himself home?
Which is why the investigation must continue, because it is not into Eddie Johnson.
Well, I'll
really
cut to the chase
Heather's
on
right
that.
About that.
Well, of course it wasn't followed. You've got a guy who's asleep at the wheel of a car, literally asleep at the wheel of a car, 12:30 at night, who's had a couple drinks. Do you think you and I have to take a field sobriety test? Yes. If it's the superintendent of the cops, do you think he's going to get one? I could see those cops going, oh, crap. All right, boss, drive on home. What's shocking about that?
This is the fundamental question facing the Chicago Police Department and whomever is the next superintendent. How do you break through that code of silence, that thin blue line that, you know, sort of was at the heart of the Laquan McDonald scandal and, you know, appears to be implicated here? How do you change that culture? I don't know the answer to that question.
It would have been an interesting scene in the movie where the upstart cops go, hey, chief, we don't want to do this. You don't want to do this, but it'll be worse if you don't. So why don't you get out and touch your nose for us? Do the dance.
Just breathe into the breathalyzer.
I know, just so we can, trust us, you'll thank us when you pass the test.
I suspect if he was showing signs of drunkenness, they might have acted differently, perhaps.
I mean, differently how?
Differently,
like, we've got to make you take this test, really need to let you drive yourself home.
Or there's two of us in the car, and one of us is going to drive your car home, and we're going to follow you in the squad car and get you home that way. I mean, there are other things they might have done short of arresting him. And I think, I'm not for cops getting special favors, like parking at Soldier Field. You know, we talk about that sort of thing. But I don't know if he didn't show dangerous behavior there. I don't put that on the Laquan McDonald level. I just think that's a different thing.
I think the fact that he was asleep in the roadway triggers home.
Now, was he in the roadway or had he pulled over?
It's not clear.
It's not clear.
They said at a stop sign. So my reading is he was, on the right lane there at a stop sign and fell asleep. But I don't know then how the car isn't idling forward. I don't know if he thinks to put it in park. I don't know the answer to that.
I thought that he had pulled over at a stop sign. And that to me is a responsible gesture. I mean, if you're rather than trying to continue to drive.
We've done the Chicago teacher strike on this podcast too much, except for the following 2 points, Steve. I mean, thank God it's over, right?
Amen. Well, it's not ratified. We won't know until the 15th whether the teachers have ratified the agreement.
That's an interesting point. We're all assuming that this is a done deal. It's not a done deal yet, right?
So is that why they're running TV or radio commercials to shore up their support among the teachers?
With parents and community leaders by our side, we demanded more for public schools and the families who rely on them. We kept going until Chicago heard us. Our students deserve more.
Now we have a landmark contract.
Right. One, they want popular opinion to believe that they won, right? And two, they got to get this deal approved.
And so a lot of people think it's inappropriate crowing or it's manipulative. Some of my listeners weren't even crazy about whatever the commercials cost. Those aren't free ads. They're paying money from union dues, not tax dollars, but union dues to run commercials on this radio station and others.
Which they were doing before, during the strike, they were running
Correct.
Some ads as well.
Yeah, but this is...
Sure, but that was maybe when the argument here it was to, I'm not sure what the point of...
Right, I don't think they would have been conspicuously absent had they not spent the money and run these ads. To me, it just looks like they're saying, hey, look, everybody, it was worth it, which I guess is to your point, Heather, a way of ensuring that the teachers vote along with them. And why wouldn't the teachers? Do you have a theory on that?
So the deal relies on them giving up, the teachers giving up 6 days of pay. It was an 11-day strike. They're going to make up 5 days. They will not be paid for 6 days. And that amounts to $68 million, which is, a significant chunk of change for the membership. That's close to a 3% pay cut.
If you go on strike, you take a risk. That's what strike is about.
But the problem is that in the past, the Chicago Teachers Union had never not been able to negotiate to make up those strike days. So for everybody I talked to, they didn't even think this was a possibility. And they were really caught off guard by the mayor sort of drawing that really hard line in the sand that, of course, she walked back a little bit.
A little bit.
They could also have up to, what is it, Eric, 240 days in the bank at the end of their...
244 sick days, up from, I think it was 40 before. Now they can bank up to 244. They can't cash them in for money at the end of their service. They can, however, use the accumulated sick days for like service credits or pension credits. Essentially, you can retire, that many days early and still act as though you had served X number of days on the job. So,
But they don't get that in cash, and they wouldn't stay on the payroll like for a full year if they've got 240 days.
Yeah, I don't know I believe they would probably keep all their other benefits too because they're technically still employed.
So they'd be sick on September 23rd and until June 20th.
Right. Well, but you'd be on the payroll for that year. Right.
You're on the payroll, but you're
well, that's getting paid.
I'm sorry. I don't think you're on the payroll. I don't think you're getting paid for those days.
Well, if you are, let's just
You're getting credit as though you're. I assume maybe your benefits continue, but I don't know all those fine points. But I do know that essentially, this is an unusual benefit to get. Certainly in the private sector, you don't get that.
Man alive, this is just another line in the sand, right? Those of us who don't have some of the benefits, and if you're in the private sector, you get a chance of making more money. But some of the benefits.
Not a lot of people.
Well, here's the interesting thing about that story that I thought was a very interesting little side note, which is that up until 2012, they could keep like more than 300 days. I forget the exact number right now. Do you remember what the number
was? I don't remember what it was, but it was significantly more.
And they could cash those in also. That was like every day you get paid for those days. In 2012, they cut it back to 40 days that you could accumulate total. And so what happened was that absenteeism among teachers in CPS went up 150%. So all of a sudden they all got quite a bit sicker because they couldn't hang on to these days for credit.
They
were using them, and what that caused was a crisis in some schools because you got to get whenever they're using these sick days, they got to call in substitutes. The substitutes don't know what's going on. It is not good for education to be funneling subs in. So that one of the reasons that the city, or I'm sorry, that CPS agreed to this is that they realized that. I mean, essentially, the teachers were saying, if you don't do this, we're going to keep calling in sick, and that's not good for the
kids. You roll over sick days where you were?
Oh, no.
Okay, so at the end of the year, if you have 5-6 days left and you haven't used them, they just evaporate, right?
They're gone. Yeah, well, don't get me started on the Tribune's new days off policy, but they don't roll over.
Yeah, right. And I just wonder what the best way to manage people is relative to that, right? Are you encouraging people to show up to work sick, which I don't want?
Well, that's a problem.
I don't want anybody to do it. That's a problem in this business. People are always saying, I'll soldier on, I'll come in and work. I'm like, dude, get out of here. We're sharing headphones and microphones. Scram. I don't want you here when you're sick.
Hear that, Steve?
Yeah,
stay
I know,
home
trust
next
me.
Time.
Well, it's actually going around here right now.
To me, it raises the question, are sick days a benefit in the same way that salary is a benefit or that healthcare is a benefit? Or is it sort of an accommodation that your boss makes because your employer makes because the frailties of the human body?
Well,
you know they're going to be sick.
Or the human mind. You take a mental health day.
And so do you take sick days? And I ask this on people's Facebook. Do you take sick days when you're not sick in order to use them up at the end of the
day? Oh, yeah. What did you get on that?
Most people said no. They don't.
No, I think they don't
really?
Either. But more and more companies are moving toward just time off.
Right.
Yeah, that's what we're
doing. Use them any way you want. Why are you hating that?
Hating what?
You said, don't get me started on the Tribune's new days off policy.
It's this amorphous policy where you take the days off that you need. And if you're in a position in your career where you're not like a famous low-life columnist, you might not feel comfortable taking the time off that you would have gotten before. Because, you don't want to be the person who, like, I need time off.
Yeah, I mean, studies show that the unlimited vacation time reduces the amount of vacation and sick time that people take.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Because instead of being sort of given it as a benefit, it's sort of something that you have to take.
And
there's something psychologically difficult about that. It's the whole.
I think I could pass that test, but I'd like to see.
Well, but you're a famous newsman,
right?
But you're hesitant.
And a host of the Business Lunch,
right?
Eric, are you hesitant to take all the days off that you could because you don't want to be absent from your space in the paper?
Oh, I have that feeling too. Yeah,
I'm that way about my show.
That's neurosis.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to my world.
Are all your columns fresh? You don't write some of those in advance and.
Oh, they're all fresh there.
or they don't rerun old ones, figuring.
Yeah,
didn't that happen to Ann Landers or Dear Abby or somebody?
They used to do that with Royko at a point, didn't he?
And Bob Green at one point used to rerun his columns.
Bob Green. But, flashback.
All right. Well, we're moving on.
Well, he only wrote one column, didn't he?
Harsh.
There are two people whose identity I think a lot of people are curious about this week. One is, who is that racist customer at the Buffalo Wild Wings? There's just an angle. I think that'd be a great sit-down. I don't want to give the guy the microphone, but I'm also curious about him. And number two, who's the whistleblower on President Trump's Ukraine call? The president's son has repeated a name, which a website offered without much proof, is the person in question. Donald Trump has called for this person's name, but has himself not retweeted the content of his son's tweet.
Rand Paul down in Kentucky this week said,
"We also now know the name of the whistleblower. The whistleblower needs to come before Congress as a material witness because he worked for Joe Biden at the same time Hunter Biden was getting money from corrupt oligarchs. I say tonight to the media, do your job and print his name."
Stand up and do it, little Rand Paul. I mean, it's
or little Donald Trump. You can all yeah. you can, anyone can do it. This is not it's not against the law. No, it's not against the law for them to say it. They're afraid to say it because they know that it contravenes a somewhat sacred notion, which is that whistleblowers deserve this kind of protection for the protection of all of us, not just Republicans.
It's wrong to do it. I don't know if it's not illegal or illegal, but it's the wrong thing to do.
Yes.
Can I dispute your premise?
Go.
I am not interested in the whistleblower at all. Everything in that complaint has been confirmed by other people
under
who
oath.
Have put their names to it. So at some point, the whistleblower I think about as the anonymous tips sometimes I get. Like, I would never sort of publish something, you know, attributed to sort of an anonymous tipster.
Set a guy on the phone.
Right. but I would publish that same information if I could confirm it with on the record.
And then
but
the source is irrelevant.
But this is what they do. This is like the Peter Strzok of the impeachment, because the Strzok didn't really have any involvement in that, and the whistleblower, his identity or her identity is not relevant.
You're absolutely totally right,
because the information has come out. The whistleblower did his or her job, and then there was testimony to back up everything in the report. It doesn't matter who the whistleblower is.
And Trump tweets about, don't I have the right to confront my accuser? The whistleblower is not his accuser any
Correct.
Longer. As Heather points out, there have been a raft of witnesses on the record giving their names who have supported and amplified the claim, plus the transcript, the so-called transcript, that the White House released. All these things underscore the credibility of the original whistleblower's report, but his name, which is known all through Washington.
The difficult thing, or the frustrating thing, is they continue to do this. This is, it's an absolutely irrelevant argument, and yet there are people who believe it and believe that it carries weight.
It's
and that's how they get away with
it's
this
It's an
stuff.
Attempt to distract us from the
I think it's successful in many ways.
And I think it's also interesting to know what are the rules about a whistleblower. Here's a story from the Washington Post. Yes, outing the whistleblower is against the law. This is an opinion piece, but it's a pretty informed one from somebody who's worked in that
field.
Well,
this is not fair for you to bring in informed opinions.
And
it's a podcast, John. Come on.
And here's NPR saying, can Trump legally out the whistleblower? Experts say it would not violate any laws.
Okay, there
so
you go.
So I've been reading about it today. If you get enough attorneys, they'll all find reasons to make their cases. But it sure sounds to me like, yes, you can say the name of this person if you want to. Fox News hosts, not news, but Fox News hosts have been told not to do that yet. Once it becomes more common, this name, and you can Google it and find it, but I do worry about the safety of that individual. And I also just think, even if the guy lives a natural, healthy life, his life is compromised by publishing his
name. By doing the right thing.
Christine Blasey Ford apparently still can't find work or go out in public without being hassled.
Right.
It's a year after the Kavanaugh hearings.
It's the biggest shock this week, the Sondelin flipping on his testimony.
Oh, by the way, I did do a crime.
Now that you mention it, now I do remember that there was a quid pro quo, says Gordon Sondelin now, the EU ambassador.
Well, he's figured out that it's going to be better to come clean now than spend time in prison for lying under oath previously.
Who's going to prosecute him? I mean, I agree with you. Is William Barr going to charge him with perjury?
Now, no. No, but he's got thinking long term, I think, here, which is, I mean, in some ways, I think this is, he's one of the first people who's just going to get on the right side of history. I think that's what he's doing.
And he's in a very particular place, too, in that he, you know, was appointed directly by Trump. He was a Trump campaign supporter. He gave Trump $1 million for his campaign and basically purchased this ambassadorship.
Wasn't it for the inauguration? Wasn't it for the celebration that
right.
he gave $1 million?
Right. I forget whether it was in the New York Times or the Washington Post that did a really interesting profile about how his life's ambition was to be an ambassador to somewhere. And this is how, you know, he made it happen. And in his testimony, he acknowledged that it had not worked out so well for him, actually.
Well, he got to be an ambassador.
Sure. And now, you know, his hotels in Seattle are suffering as well, as I understand it.
I thought those vanity ambassadorships were supposed to go to, like, Tahiti or, you know, Guam. Or not Guam, they're us. But, you know, not to the EU.
I also was questioning this week the wisdom of the Trump supporters whose T-shirts behind the president at his rally say, read the transcript, because I think the transcript's pretty damning.
There's no transcript.
What it's do you also mean, a no summary.
Not a transcript. It's not a transcript.
Not a transcript.
Yeah. What is it?
Well,
what
because
are we talking
it
about?
Because it includes ellipsis, and we know from Lieutenant Colonel Vindman that those ellipsis contained important information that were not reflected in that record.
The document that was released, you know this, John, says this is not a transcript. This is a summary of the call.
Right.
And yet people, the president and others, continue to say, read the transcript. Well, it's not a transcript. There were other words in that conversation that we don't know.
Well, if it said read the document, would that have made you happy? I'm missing the significance of
when
your
you
point.
Say transcript
says this is exactly what was said. It was verbatim.
Okay, the transcript implies there's nothing else that happened besides what was here, and we don't know that's the case because
well, we
this
know
is
that
summary.
That was in fact not the case. Because Vindman said under oath, I tried to correct it so that it was fully reflective, and he wasn't allowed to do it.
And the ellipsis in the document back that up.
So isn't when you say read the transcript, it's another one of those reveal the whistleblower
and I think
things.
It's also a bluff. It's a complete bluff because if you do read the
oh, yeah, what are you going to use
now? I was going to use the wrong word. Yeah. The document, if you read
it. Well, that's weak.
It's damning.
It is damning.
I was hopeful that Trump was going to hold some sort of fireside chat where he read the so-called transcript. I thought that would have been hilarious and delightful.
Is it surprising to you or almost, I don't know, fascinating is an interesting way to put it. If you thought, what was going to take this guy down? You know, forget all the boorish behavior over the years, the campaign, his years of presidency, etc. You may have thought the Mueller report. I mean, this Ukraine call, I didn't see coming as the pivot point in his presidency that it's become.
I was surprised that the so-called transcript summary was as damning as it was because I didn't believe that they would put out something that, as Eric said, is so clearly inculpatory.
Corroborates what the whistleblower said.
Right. It was a very strange decision on their part to release it because they could still be arguing to this day that the call was not anything like these people remembered. It was much better, but the document does not reflect that.
Well, then explain Lindsey Graham to me. He said, I don't even want to read this stuff because I've already made up my mind about the phone call.
If you could show me that, you know, Trump actually was engaging in a quid pro quo outside the phone call, that would be very disturbing. I'm not going to read these transcripts.
Explain that guy to me.
I cannot. Did you? So I saw today that big billboards have gone up in his hometown of South Carolina with quotes that he said about Donald Trump during the campaign. This guy is a kook. He's not fit for the presidency. If we elect Donald Trump, Republicans will be destroyed. So he's another guy like Vondland, the ambassador to the EU, who has gone from foe to friend to super friend.
And there's also a whole set of delightful quotes from Lindsey Graham. He was the House impeachment manager of Bill Clinton.
Impeachment is not about punishment. Impeachment is about cleansing the office. Impeachment is about restoring honor and integrity to the office.
You don't have to violate the law to deserve impeachment. We have the honor of this office to uphold. I mean,
Southern accent you just
did. It's hilarious. It is hilarious. Lindsey Graham.
I don't know how to read the public reactions the president is getting lately either. Okay, there's rallies. Tens of thousands of people cheer and laugh. He's hilarious. At less selective gatherings, the reactions have been interesting. Maybe that shouldn't surprise anybody, but I just think it's noteworthy because you so seldom see Donald Trump at a gathering where he's getting anything but praise. He was booed at the World Series. And I thought that was interesting. When he took his sons to that UFC fight this week, and according to Fox News, was cheers and boos. CNN described it as boos and cheers. This weekend, he's going to go to the Alabama-LSU game, biggest college game of the season in the country.
In Alabama.
And the Alabama Student Government Association put out a warning to students not to engage in unruly behavior or they'll be kicked out of the stadium for the rest of the season. Quote, any organization that engages in disruptive behavior during the game will be removed from block seating instantly for the remainder of the season. Maybe anticipating they don't want the president to get booed. They say, no, it's not that at all. We just, it's a security issue. We all have to behave. I wonder if that's a sea change or just a unique set of circumstances. I wonder how to read these public displays that he's getting.
I don't put too much stock in those kind of things because it is so routine for politicians to be booed at public events. Every poll shows this country is very split on this president, and they're really dug in the way they feel about him. And so any gathering of 50,000 people, 20,000 people, it's going to be, you know, half and half. And people who don't like him really, really don't like him. And people who like him really, really like him. I don't think we've seen quite this polarized thing in generations in the United States.
Let's not forget that President Obama was delivering a congressional address, and he was heckled by a congressman who yelled,
The reforms I'm proposing would not apply to those who are here illegal.
That sort of reaction, I don't think is, it's not the same, but it's certainly, in the same genre of response.
I thought the reaction to the reaction, though, in the case of you lie, the body then went.
It's not true.
Like, you shouldn't have done that.
Right.
You know what was also interesting to me as an antidote to all of this is that when Sean Spicer goes on Dancing with the Stars, he is still dancing with the stars. Sean Spicer is about as good a dancer as you might imagine, which is not competitive with the people that are on that show. And he's still advancing week after week. And the president said, vote for my boy, Sean Spicer. It's clear to me what's happening there. It's another way to express your opinion about the president. Let's vote for Sean Spicer.
Sure. And people who aren't fans of the president, who aren't fans of Sean Spicer, who don't want to signal their allegiance to the president, have just opted out of Dancing with the Stars. They're not voting at all. They don't want to be a part of it. So it's an interesting argument for negative polarization.
Chris Borelli at the Tribune wrote a great piece about Sean Spicer's most recent appearance and talked about how, you know, oafish he was. But he urges everyone to go and vote for Spicer because it will thoroughly, ultimately discredit and ruin Dancing with the Stars, which deserves to be ruined after this.
Maybe after this, but up until this, and they've had divisive.
They had Tom DeLay Perry.
They had a Palin. Didn't they have a Palin also?
Absolutely.
Sarah Palin's daughter was a dancer. And by the way, here's what happens when those quote-unquote unpopular or controversial people go on the show. They get humanized. You get to see the other side of them. You do start to like them. It's happening with Sean Spicer, too. I don't think that's why he's still on the show. I think it's these other factors. But it is a way to sort of soften your image.
You become less of a cardboard cutout villain guy.
Which I think is a good thing, right?
I just don't know that I have any interest in getting to know him more because I'm judging him not on who he is, but on what he has done, which was peddle lies to the American people.
And it just makes the show illegitimate. I mean, I'm more interested in, I want to watch my damn dancing show, and I don't have a dancing show anymore. I have this meter for Donald Trump is what I'm watching.
Yeah.
I feel for you, John. This
I know.
Is terrible.
You
don't
watch this show.
Can I recommend So You Think You Can Dance? That is also a good dancing
show.
So
I've heard, yeah, right.
The other thing, of course, is that Sean Spicer is irrelevant now. I mean, really, he's not an important person anymore. He's a consultant or something. Yeah. And he's not anyone.
And his book tanked.
There's no one we don't need to get to know him better as a person because he's not a figure in our lives anymore.
I read his book. It tanked. It did not do well.
It did not do well.
If you go about three quarters of the way through his book, the thing where I'm like, listen, I'm Mr. Examine Both Sides, where I really got off the bus. And of course, there's things along the way I don't like, but there's a lot of things I didn't know. It humanized him, right? He spent just a couple of pages, but he said that if you had been in the room when I was in the room, when Donald Trump was talking about his spirituality, about his religious beliefs, you would be a believer. Sean Spicer's a very religious person. I thought, dude, these are two pages your book does not need. It completely shows where your head is, and that is...
Yeah, his head is in a place where the sun does not shine.
I was thinking about that, and I don't need to go there.
We all picked up what you laid down.
Thank you very much for that. Heather Schroen, thank you for coming in.
Happy to be here.
Nice to see you, Eric Zorn.
Good to see you, John.
Why did you call yourself the lowlife, Eric Zorn?
Oh, that was referring to Trump's tweet about the Washington Post reporters who told the story that he had been asking Attorney General Barr to call a news conference and say that his call was perfect.
That story is just breaking today. Again, it was
my adjectives are fresh. Also,
did the president ask Barr to hold a press conference to exonerate him?
According to the Washington Post, the lowlife reporters,
and it was confirmed by the New York Times and NBC News.
Lowlifes, more lowlifes.
Bertrand's pushing me out of the way. Thank you, Steve Bertrand, for being part of this broadcast. Ella Garris produces it. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.